there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Atin here at The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial in New York City. This is going to be a series of programs talking about men. Men. What are men? What is manhood? What's it about? How do men grow from being boys? A tremendous discovery. What we will do is play for you some previously recorded programs as well that will have callers on it from earlier times, but those were programs all at this subject. So you listen up, and this is going to be, even though some of these will be repeats, you will hear some wonderful information about men. This series is also available. You'll be able to get these. Manhood. Manhood. What is manhood? Manhood demands a journey. Manhood demands a test, not testosterone. Manhood does not come automatically growing as the body grows. The journey of manhood is perilous and painful. The outcome cannot be planned or controlled. It's shrouded in paradox. The journey must be done with a man's eyes open, consciously, and continually choosing a path that leads away from the familiar and the secure. A man does not become a man just out of growing up and getting older. The trap for most men is to remain in boyhood forever in so many forms. I mean, how many people have been related to men? And they say, you've heard the expression from many women, they're all boys. They're all boys. Well, in the upcoming series, you're going to learn some of what we've learned about men and what separates the men from the boys and how a man who might still be in his childhood could figure out a way of moving himself. It does take consciousness. It does take a psycho-spiritual journey that demands attention. It doesn't happen passively. You don't become an adult, man or woman, by being passive. You need active attention at defeating some of the early childhood stuff that says to you, whatever you did as a kid, you do now. Just keep repeating childhood and being a child. The journey is a psycho-spiritual one that demands modern man's attention. Society and the world's survival depends on men consciously taking up the mission towards inner wisdom and purpose. Men who do not take the journey of consciousness are dangerous men. Just as burned out men are dangerous men. But the unconscious journeys, the unconscious ones, those are the ones that are really scary. Our government, I remember once a quote from George Bush. He said, I don't like to be very introspective. I don't like to be very introspective. Oh my gosh, it's scary. The idea, therefore, is I focus on the extroceptive. I'm perceptive only on the outside. I only look at other people. I don't look at myself. So the journey of manhood starts when a man hears the voice of wisdom within, the elder voice, and he chooses to listen. You know that thing that happens to you when you're going along one day and somebody says to you, somebody says, hey, you want to buy something cheap? You want to get this watch? It's a Rolex. Come here, buddy. I'll give it to you. And some elder voice inside you says, get out of here. Even if it is real, I don't want to be a part of the theft. Somebody does something, makes you angry. A voice inside you says, let it go. He's bent out of shape. That's the voice of the elder. That's the voice of wisdom. We don't listen to it. We choose not to listen. We hear another voice that comes up and say, yeah, but we're not going to let him get away with that. Most men do not speak, do not listen, because they're taught to expect that voice that they're listening to is too weak. Men don't listen because they don't have respect for their elder voice. They don't have respect for their elders in general. See, the voice that you hear comes to you like the voice of wisdom. If you grow up having a big resistance to all of your elders, then you resist your own elder. It's like women who have trouble with their mothers. They grow up and they actually lose such respect for their mothers that what happens is they begin to feel a disrespect for the mother inside them, and therefore, they cannot mother themselves. Women who cannot take care of themselves, who cannot nurture themselves, are usually alienated from their mothers. Men who do not listen to the wisdom of their inner voices are men who alienated from their fathers and their elders. Without the strength, without the wisdom of a real elder, a man is left to the unconscious forces, thinking that he's on the right path to manhood, thinking he's on some kind of a right mission, but not knowing because there was nobody to teach him. There was once a theology professor who said that a man spends the first half of his life struggling with the mysteries of sex and the last half of his life struggling with the mysteries of death. Men in this culture often get stuck in the misery of sex instead of its mystery. They never learn to struggle with the mystery of death, which is really the mystery of initiation, which we're going to talk about. The wonderful mystery of sex starts when an infant is given the awesome comfort and unceasing attention of a mother in full identification with this mother type. The mystery of sex is that the mystery of the life force freely given to another. The mother, who is a conscious mother, gives a man a good sense of hope and an abiding faith in the goodness of his own life force. She does not criticize his sexuality, play with his sexuality, or use his sexuality. Now, on the other hand, there are many mothers out there who are left to do things on their own, frustrated, unavailable husbands, unavailable fathers, and I'm going to call them the neurotic mothers. The neurotic mothers form an attachment with a son, a baby boy, and in it, the sexuality becomes a part of the play. And so privately, because they know nobody is watching, the neurotic mother, which we could call the dark mother, forms a kind of an attachment to her son and uses her son symbolically in some way to deal with all the frustrations in her life. For example, she never had her father. Her husband left her. She forms an attachment with her son so that her son will never leave her. How do you do that? You have to unconsciously hypnotize this child into believing that he cannot live without you. How does that happen? What do we do? How do you do that with a child? Well, it certainly happens enough because, you see, most men believing they can't live without a partner. We could all live without partners. We choose to have a partner. Boys believe that they've got to have somebody around. If it's temporary sex through an addiction or if it's miserable relationships, they must stay there. They're afraid to leave. The misery comes from this attachment to this neurotic mother who is glad to keep a boy unconscious, close, and infantile. Now, Roberta, does that sound like I'm blaming mothers?
Well, I have to say, Armand, that yes, it does.
I thought you'd say that. Mm. But I'm not. You see, it's part of a system. It's not their fault, but it comes through them. It's the only relationship there is. There's the boy and his mother. Dad is gone. Most dads are absent. Now, if dad is gone, And mom is there, and mom is frustrated, and then mom has the privacy of her son. Here's where there is a field for neurosis. And let's say one percentage, a small percentage, of the mothers who are left alone with these boys do these crazy things that they don't even know they're doing. I know mothers who, in the privacy of their own room, they admit to me they like to tickle their son's penis because he giggles. And they do it because he likes it. It's not sexual. It's just fun. I play with him. You know, he's so cute. What's it like to be a person who feels so powerless, a mother who feels so powerless in life, to have a boy that you could do anything you want with? Anything. He's a baby. It's the only power you've had in your life. My God, it's such a field for abuse. And you, I'm looking at you, Roberta, with your son, you never even would say, I mean, I know your son and I know how careful you've been, but you didn't have to be careful because no part of you was going to act out this drama on your son, was it? How conscious were you when you were bringing up Henry of the effect that you were having on him as you were bringing him up and playing with him?
I was as conscious as I could be, and I did my best not to make him dependent on me, but maybe I went overboard in the other direction.
Just
to be overly cautious about not developing the kind of relationship that you were describing. So that Henry, ever since he was very young, he's been pretty much self-directed and self-managed.
Yeah, what a pity, huh? How unusual. He's a beautiful guy. I know what you mean. And at times he has trouble following somebody else's lead. He's so independent.
Yes, he doesn't follow anyone else's lead.
But in its worst, the mother binds. She binds the child instead of freeing the child. She leads a boy to mistake her for his own life force. She gives momentary euphoria, followed by another experience of the emptiness of his soul, the emptiness of his manhood, for the sake of the breast, you know, and the euphoric breast, or the cuddling, or the holding, or your mama's little boy, or I'll sing to you, it's only you and me, and nobody understands it, and we are the only two, and giving him the idea that he's the only one that could make mommy happy, she cripples him without knowing it. The system cripples him. Does she do it maliciously? Is she sitting there maliciously doing it to a child? No, she's just acting out. It's like her own addiction. But it happens. Now, once this happens with a mother, it comes in the form of an addiction, you know? And once a boy, a man, gets addicted to his mother and learns that he cannot separate from her, he becomes addicted to all women or men, but his relationships are about addiction. It is about, I cannot survive without you. Without having somebody around. And that's the difference. Relationships for men are choices. You know, if you're a man in life, it's a choice. You have a relationship. It's not a compulsion. It's not an addiction. And that's what the difficulty is. Can you get to the point where you have made a choice and it's not just another mother substitute that you're hanging on to? Armand DeMille with Roberta Atti. This idea of this neurotic mother working with a boy, you could just get the picture, you know, and you could see many boys who have gone through this. She seduces him. She cajoles him. She threatens him. She promises him. She is... anything from a, she'll do anything for him in one way and be horrendous by threatening to leave him in another. She most often shows up in other women who seem to hold the answer to happiness. You know, in other words, when a man suddenly looks at a woman and says, aha, you're the key. You're the one I've been waiting for, the aha experience. Ah, there's my pleasure object. How many men have fallen in love? Usually the men who fall in love spontaneously, on the spot, are men who have found the very addiction of their mother substitute perfectly. And here's what they'll find. Show a man, a woman, in very high-heeled shoes, who has some form of power that she shows. So she now is going to show, she's like, she has a kind of a nasty attitude, and she's got, wears very high heels, and wears dark clothing, and kind of looks like a dominant woman who's, you know, a strong woman. Many men will find this, and they will be very attracted to it. When you ask them what was so attractive about her, they said, well, it's nice meeting a woman who could hold her own, who's her own kind of woman. What it really is show me a woman who has power. Power over me. The potential of power over me. Men become attracted to this in women, and they will actually fall in love with the powerful woman. Powerful women, women who tend to be aggressive in life, have come to me many times complaining, how is it that I always wind up with little boys? Well, you see, it's the little boys who are attracted to the potential whip of a strong woman, the potential whip of what they perceive as a strong woman. So it's the little boys who are attracted to it, so the boys are automatically attracted. Or a man sees a woman who is a great sexually responsive woman. And he's juicy, and he could get lost in her sexually, and he could have sex with her day and night, and he feels turned on to her all the time. Again, a mother substitute. This is the sexual addiction. He is having sex as a way of staying outside of himself and not facing himself. The sexual addiction becomes just a compulsion over and over again, and she's the repository. Men get stuck in that. Boys get stuck in that. A very difficult thing. So she shows up in other women, and he says to himself, well, there is the answer of my happiness. It is that woman who looks that certain way, who sounds that certain way. Many men fall in love with women, never even speaking to them. They just see them. It's what they call love at first sight. It's that glance that tells them. It's as if she holds the key to my happiness. She. That person, and unfortunately for men and women, nobody holds the key to your happiness. Believing that another person has the key to your happiness is, in a way, being stuck in the childhood of believing that a parent has the key to your happiness. Women can become the unwitting victim of they can hold a man back from his destiny, and many men will choose a woman who hold him back. You know, correct him. They'll very often choose weak women, a woman who is not capable of doing anything, who then undermines him, and he becomes undermined in his own life so he can achieve nothing. But women are not the problem. The problem is that this, once this neurotic attachment is formed, the men, the boys, perpetuate the problem. It's not the women who are the problem. It's the men and the way they live it through. Armand DeMille here with you. This neurotic woman mother will do anything to keep a man from listening to his own elder voices. You see, now here's where the missing father takes place, and this is what you were talking about, Roberta. When the father is missing, the man has... he has this elder voice, this wisdom voice inside him that he could listen to, but he can barely hear it. Because there are so many other voices around shouting louder. You know what I mean? He has a voice of wisdom somewhere inside him, but he doesn't listen to it. If you don't have a father, you pay less and less attention to the elder voice. The mother who is trying to, in some way, isolate her son, who is angry at her husband, who wants her son not to form a relationship with her ex-husband, with the father, and many women do this, they won't allow him to hear the elder voice inside him. It's a very interesting thing. You can actually hear it in the voices of boys who are very closely attached to their mothers. They usually have a high-pitched voice. It's almost as if the elder is missing. The man side of their voice is missing. The mother, I'm talking about the dark, the neurotic mother, the mother who feels attached, the mother who feels that nothing she has in life has worked and all she's got left is this little boy who she toys with, who she turns into her boyfriend. She'll do anything to keep a man from listening to another man, from getting an elder voice, and men become desperate. Now, this is quite a big statement on my part. It is the men who most often are mostly attached to their mothers, who have formed their relationship with their mothers, who do not have a present father, who I believe are the most attracted to homosexuality. Now, many of you are going to say, no, it's inborn. But this search for the missing father, this search for the missing elder, becomes a desperate search. And for those of you who have known men who have cruised the baths and the trucks and things like that, one wonders what they're doing going from man to man for a quick sexual satisfaction. It is almost out there acting out, are you my daddy? Are you my daddy? Are you my daddy? So I believe what we will find among most men who are gay, and I know this is stereotyping, is a tremendous attachment to a mother and a negative attachment to a father. And I know that that makes me sound politically incorrect as I say it, but it just becomes rather obvious at times. And it doesn't mean that having, you know, being homosexual or being choosing men is the wrong choice. It just seems like that pattern is there. Certain people are desperately looking for their fathers, and other people give up. So you can understand that if a mother is trying to isolate a son and trying to keep her son from being with anybody else, and she wants to keep her all by herself, all for herself, she stops him from listening to other men. Now, the other thing she'll do is she'll sabotage any relationship he has with other women because she wants to isolate him. So in a way, she helps him find fault with just about any girlfriend. And that becomes a problem as well. The journey to manhood starts with a struggle. Just as an infant must struggle to leave his mother's womb and breathe his own oxygen, a boy must struggle to cut down the psychological umbilical cord. Separation from his mother is always a struggle, but it's a vital, important mission for every boy. Mom is either going to help or she's going to hinder. You get a mother like Roberta Atti, conscious in her mind. She says to her son, you've got to do it on your own. Let me help you, but you've got to do it on your own. Most mothers don't do that with children. Or maybe they do. But the boys who have the most struggle, especially the ones with the most addictions, are usually the ones who cannot separate. Separating from your mother brings a man face to face with his father and his marketplace of the marketplace world of men. The boy growing into adolescence has a lot to learn. Here he develops his warrior energy, you know. Here he learns how to take care of himself and others according to what the world says. Now if you have a good father, there's a great thing. A good father helps a boy separate from mom and eventually hands him over to, he says, here. Be a part of the world. Let me show you how. That's what the good dad does. In the interim, he models, the father models the promise of manhood. He gives a boy motivation to face the separation and the individuation. A good father is a symbol who says to you, I'd like to be a man one day. I'd like to be like Dad. Not, I'd like to be like Dad so that I don't have to listen to anybody ever again. No, I'd like to be like Dad because Dad seems solid. Dad seems okay. If he listens to his own voice If a boy grows to a point where he hears his own voice, he eventually separates from his father as well. This is how his struggle continues. Unfortunately, we live in a culture of also unconscious, neurotic fathers who are not men themselves. They're still boys. So now they're boys and they don't know what to do with this other boy who's trying to grow up and competing with them for mom's attention, and mom's throwing them in the middle, so they wind up fighting and competing with their own sons. It gets crazy. So the fathers who don't know how to give their sons the freedom and the leadership wind up also trying to infantilize the child. Okay. Still, we as boys have to fight our way through that, but we could do it. We could do it. It becomes a more difficult battle when you have a father who is competing with you and wants to kill you and is neurotic or is ignoring you or has turned you over to your mother. And you have a mother who's trying to act out her own life through you. It becomes very difficult. Look, moms, dads, I don't blame you. I understand. You never had it any different yourself. But mostly to the boys out there, the struggle is enormous. Maybe you started today. Maybe you just started today. Maybe today's the day that you get a chance to start it. This is Armand DeMille again with Roberta Atti. We're talking about men. We're talking about men, and for the next few days of our program, we're going to be talking more about men. More and more going into the depth of the relationships of men. We're going to be talking about the mind of men. Men and their relationships to their mothers. We're going to be talking about men who don't have friends. Men, the need for nurturance. We're going to talk about all addictions, too. Talk about male burnout coming up. Talk about men and their boundaries and walls, you know, the separations that they have. And men's emergence from adolescence. It's a tough one. Listen up, my friends, because, you know, even though you think that this is an easy thing, even though you think that there is not much to learn, that, you just grow up, you get along, we're all operating on such a level of automatic that we just don't know what to do with ourselves. Separating, learning to separate, learning to move from childhood to adulthood is a big struggle, not an easy one. Hey, it's almost 1:30 here at WBAI, almost 99.5 FM. Let's play you a manly piece of music so you can get this. I play this tongue-in-cheek. Fabulous. Hold on a second. Here's a little one for you, friends.
I've seen the future, brother. It is murder. seen the nation's rise and fall. I've heard their stories, heard them all. But love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it clear, to say it cold. It's over, it ain't going any further. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder. Bang the ball slide. In all directions, won't be nothing. Nothing you can measure anymore. The blizzard. The blizzard of the world.
Talking about men here at WBAI, and if you just tuned in, hearing the fantastic music, you're listening to a show called The Positive Mind. And probably if you heard Leonard Cohen's voice, you were attracted to the maleness of his voice. And we're doing a program today about men. I'm in the studio with Roberta Maria Atti, my co-host and assistant, who's helped me do some research on this today. We're starting a series of programs about men. some of which are repeats. We put these together so that you can understand more about men. Do set your clocks. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, WBAI, 1 p.m. Record them if you want. But if you can't get them, then we'll make the entire set available to you. We're talking about men, and we're talking about men trying to take this journey into adulthood. Now, you know, much of the story of a man trying to grow up is his ability to separate from his symbolic mother. The dependency, she takes care of you, she's gonna, you know, withhold love, give you love, the breast in all forms. And it's a very funny thing, because the very nurturing of being loved by a mother at home is in effect nurturing an addiction. Funny to think of it as an addiction, nurturing as an addiction. Now, we're going to be talking more about that later in the week. But you see, addictions themselves are like an emotional umbilicus, connecting a man to his symbolic mother. You know, I mean, heroin. Freud used to say that the advantage of what heroin addiction was about was a man attempting to return to the womb. Just think of the feeling of heroin and morphine and opium. You slide, you slip almost into the state of a baby. And you're filled with these endorphin-like, glorious, painless feelings. It's almost like returning to infancy. Little wonder that addictions like drugs are so appealing. Addictions, you begin to believe that you need the addicted substance for existence itself. When a boy is taught as a child that he must have its parents or he can't survive, as many boys are taught, since we don't have the kind of culture where we send the kid out into the jungle for a month and say, go live in the jungle by yourself. Instead, we keep the children dependent. We let the child believe that if not for the parents, he will not survive. The belief that something on the outside is your key to survival is where the problem is. That's the whole thinking of addiction. I gotta have my grass, I gotta have my cigarettes, I've gotta have my coffee, I've gotta have my sugar, I've gotta have my women, I've gotta have my job, I've gotta have all these things that keep me existing as if it were true. How long can a person go, Roberta, without having anything? How long do you think somebody can go without eating a morsel of food?
Oh, I think it depends on the circumstances, but I guess an average person, probably between 1 and 2 weeks.
1 and 2 weeks without a morsel of food, right? Nothing. You don't need anything. Your body will still survive. Most people can't think of going beyond a day. Oh, my God, a day without food. How could I possibly do it? George Santana once said that he didn't know who discovered water, but he did know it wasn't a fish. We're an addictive society. It's hard for a man to recognize his addictions in the sea of addictiveness around him. It's hard for us to see addictions when we're just living with addictions all around us. Addiction is like pain insurance, and it's a policy that comes very cheap in our society. Most men do not realize the many ways that they're addicted and what the addiction is doing to them. Addicted men do not see the futility of their lives, the repetition of it. And there are different kinds of addiction, you know. I mean, take alcohol and drug abuse can become rather obvious when it leads to domestic violence involving a spouse, a lover, or a child, right? Then the police get involved. A man who has multiple DUIs, you know, sticks out like someone having a problem. However, when serious addictions pop out publicly, they're often seen as aberrations, the sins of some sick men, that these men are sick. The man addicted to work, sex, rage, money is seen more as macho than addicted in our society. The training manual teaches addiction. There's a little societal awareness that addicted men are still boys emotionally. The occurrence of the emotionally regressed addicted man as a cultural ideal is really unsuspected.
You know, Armand, that I think three times as many men as women suffer from addiction and or alcoholism. And by addiction, I include addiction to a process or to a behavior, not just addiction to a substance.
What is a process addiction?
A process addiction is an addiction to a behavior, to a series of behaviors that lead to a gratification that does not involve a substance. It involves, for instance, it could be something like gambling, or it could be being addicted to sex or to work or to power or to fame or to approval. So it's an addiction to something other than a substance.
Uh-huh. So people could be addicted to love or falling in love.
Yes, people can be addicted to anything that feels good.
So do you really think more men, I mean, if we use it, we throw the love in the thing, don't you think more women fall in love than men do? I mean, that helplessly in love, you know, gaga stuff. It seems like more of a...
That statistic I don't know, but this one I did actually see it, that I believe it's three times as many men. So in other words, for every four addicts, one is a female.
And do you think it includes process addiction, or do you think it's mostly hard substance?
I think it includes process addiction. It includes at least gambling, sex addiction, and I believe
workaholism.
Work addiction, yes. Now, I don't know about love addiction. You're right. Maybe that's more, that romantic falling in love is more of a women's addiction.
The occurrence of this, it's true, and we have three times as many. What does that mean to you? Why do you think men, well, it just seems that they just don't let go. They want to be numb more than women want to be numb.
Well, I think partially it could be something with the different brain, biologically the brains of men and women are different, and maybe the brains of men are more... have a propensity towards addiction that has to do with gender and the way the brain's evolved. But I also, going back to what you were saying a while ago, Armand, I also would like to comment that the mother that you were describing that you call the neurotic mother or the dark mother sounds just as lost in that relationship as the son is. And having been a young mother in this society, I can tell you that one of the urges that a mother may get, may feel is to replace the father. In other words, if the mother is aware that there isn't enough of an male elder voice around the boy growing up, The mother may develop an overly attached relationship with the son as an attempt to compensate for what's missing. But then the boy cannot grow up, and I think that it may be that the incidence of addiction is higher in men because of this particular reason, that in order for a boy to grow up, as you pointed out, there needs to be a male elder voice. When the authority, when the adult is always a female, always the mother, the boy just never grows out of the need to be nurtured, the need to be breastfed, the need to be taken care of, the need to have a mother around. So I think that boys have a harder time with that because it's the father that's missing in that picture. And so for female, it's a little bit easier. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Sure. No, I agree with you completely. I agree with you completely. Now, we're not doing a show on women, which would be a whole other thing. But I can understand how for women it's almost easier because the male presence is not as vital. It's not as vital. They're not looking. That's looking for a mother's voice.
That's what I was trying to say.
They're not
yes.
looking for a father's voice to incorporate. Many women I know have become their fathers. In a way, they
yes.
have incorporated, but that's another story we'll do when we do our women's series, which
right.
if I ever get courageous enough to do that, not knowing anything about women. Well, that's my assumption. My assumption is that whoever we are, we could talk about it, but...
I can do some research.
You can do some research, mm-hmm. yeah. You know, when we talk about addictions, most men think of only substance addictions, like alcohol, illegal drugs. But these process addictions that Roberta is talking about, they are subtle. They are subtle because they are not obvious. There's rage addiction. It's the cheapest, most accessible, and most prevalent addiction. It is an addiction to really your own rage, and we're going to talk about that in this series of programs about men. We're also going to talk about the mind of men and the chemistry of men, and then, you know, more about the relationship of men and their mothers.
Armand, many of the process addictions seem to actually be encouraged.
Absolutely.
Right? Like work addiction is definitely encouraged, productivity addiction.
We have a way of turning a social blind eye to almost all addictions for men. So if we see a man on TV, if we see Robert Palmer with 12 women dancing behind him while he talks about, I'm addicted to love.
Mm-hmm.
We consider that a macho, almost admirable image.
It becomes a role model.
Yeah, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when I grow up, I want to become a role. Oh, no, I'm going to become Robert Parker. I like to become a Bialy. Certainly we know not.
Not a donut.
Not a donut.
Thank you.
Eine Berliner. Okay, no, going back, if...
many of these addictions, we were saying, are encouraged.
Yes, they are encouraged. I remember if you look at any film before 1980, any film in the world, everybody smokes.
Yes.
I was looking at some training tapes I made, which I made in 1977. I made a series of training tapes, training
wonderful
therapists.
Tapes.
Wonderful, right?
Wonderful.
Just for therapists only. But...
wonderful tapes. I learned so much from watching those tapes, Armand.
But I was smoking the whole time. I mean, I would sit there and I'd light up a cigarette and I'd give a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
77, I was smoking. Now, and everybody was smoking, and this is an interesting thing. In every movie we see now... we'll watch an old movie and we'll see people lighting up and smoking and lighting up and smoking and lighting up and smoking, and we'll see people in the addiction, but we'll now recognize the addiction. Not only will we recognize the addiction, we'll recognize the triggers for the addiction. We'll see somebody like Alan Ladd get nervous and suddenly light a cigarette, or we'll see James Cagney get nervous and he'll suddenly light a cigarette. You'll connect now the nervousness to the actual manifestation of the addiction. If they were shooting heroin, it would be the same obvious thing. You just see it. But we don't see it in society because what society has done is clouded our own vision to seeing the addictions. One of the most popular addictions is sex addiction. We're going to talk about that later in this series. Work addiction. You could talk about anything you want, but work addiction is an attempt for the boy in some way to find some identification with his elder voice by joining in this male league of having to get things done, the male process, and he's going to try to achieve and achieve, and he believes if he achieves and he gets success, he will be a man. It is a compulsion. It's completely wrong. Because you don't feel any more manly when you have a Learjet than you do when you have a go-kart.
Mm.
Boy, that should be a quote.
That's deep. Yeah.
That's deep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a DeMelio with Roberta Archie. So, addictive sex is a norm in our culture. You know, one of the experts on sexual addiction said, talked about a cultural sexual addiction, and he described, there's a guy named Gary Brooks who wrote about a thing called the centerfold syndrome. Did you ever hear of the centerfold syndrome?
No, but it's...
Yeah.
I can...
All men being socialized to be voyeuristic, objectifying of the woman's body, competitive for the sexually attractive women, needy of validation through the responsiveness of the woman to them, and too fearful of emotional intimacy. You want to have a relationship? You hang up the Playboy centerfold, and that's your relationship. You hang it up. You hang up posters of women.
You know what this reminds me of, Armand? It reminds me of, and I have an image of a culture where boys are raised by other boys, and there's only boys. There are no men, right? Because all of the role models act in boyish ways. And all of these addictions that you're describing that are being glorified through TV or through the media are really rather boyish behaviors that an adult man may not even get that much satisfaction from. I think an adult male would not find these activities and these interests fulfilling. Do you?
You know, it's very interesting you say it, because when I think about boy-boy cultures, I think about religion. And I think about religion having this illusion of elders teaching you, but in a way, it's more of this kind of driving you into numbness, you know, and this kind of boy-to-boy. You know, just because he's wearing a habit doesn't mean he's not caught in an addiction.
Oh. That's even deeper.
That was even deeper, right?
We've
got
two
in one show.
Great.
As we've been learning, of course, that there's something about this supposed adulthood of the clergy, you know, and the religious man who you now, that's going to be your source of manhood. But no, it's not, you know. And then when they push marriage as holy matrimony, that there's going to be a meaningful personal relationship rather than an addictive one. Well, you're getting hooked into a marriage and getting stuck in a marriage is just another form of addiction. It's like repeating your childhood. And that's what's encouraged by the religions as well. So in a boy, teach boy society, how does a boy strive for his manhood? What is his individuality? What makes it work? Do you turn against everybody? No, you've got to find an elder. You really have to find someone somewhere who you could say, ah, there's a man. Let me see if I could learn from that one. If you're somebody who believes no man could teach me, you're a boy forever. That's the problem. If you're at the place where you believe you can't be taught by anybody, you're stuck forever. So this is Armando and Roberta Atti. We're trying to teach you, and this is the beginning of a series of programs about men. This is, let me tell you, my friends, mark it down, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 o'clock. We will be doing a series of 8 programs on men and men's, on what it's like to be a man. Worth listening to. And actually, some of them you've heard before. Some will actually have callers on from previous programs to give it as an example. But it's really fabulous.
So, Armand, these boys that have been raised by neurotic mothers, does that mean, what I hear you say, does that mean that the inner voice for this particular kind of person, for this man, the inner voice is that of a dark mother? There is no inner voice that is the voice of an elder father, right? And therefore, the life of that man has a tendency to become addictive in quality, because the inner voice, the predominant guidance system for that man, is this female, somewhat oppressive and dark, as you say. So how does a boy that grew up that way develop an inner father voice where it's so difficult to come by such a commodity? You can't buy it anywhere. You can't put an ad in the paper, I'm looking for a father figure. Or how does a boy develop that if all he can hear inside is this dark mother's guidance that leads him into addiction?
Well, it's a great question, and that's what we're going to be addressing for the next few weeks. One thing is for sure, though, in almost everybody, the elder voice is there. Each one of us have inside us a bit of wisdom. We have a voice of wisdom, and we hear it occasionally. It happens. It comes up. It says to you, don't do that. Let's not do that. It's a loving, nurturing voice. We just forget to listen to it. So being trained to hear your own inner voice, that's where I believe part of the magic comes in, and to trust it. This is Armand Demeaux with Roberta Atti. We will be back with you soon with the next edition of this series on men. If you want a copy of today's program, you could call 1-800-575-0580. We'll be back with you soon, my friends.